Tuesday, April 2nd, 2019. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City right here in Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every single weekday, and we talk sports with a dose of common sense. Hopefully, we can make you smile once or twice here or there. We are happy to have you here with us today. Happy Tuesday to you. You know, it was on this day, April 2nd, back in 1986, that the NCAA adopted the three-point rule, and they set the distance at 19 feet and 9 inches for college basketball. Now, it eventually ended up being moved back a foot in 2007, but I do remember when the rule was instituted. And Sports Illustrated actually ran an article, I think it was by like Jack McCallum or something, saying how the three-point shot was going to ruin college hoops. Because you had shooters at the time, guys like UCLA's Reggie Miller, Indiana's Steve Alford, and fearless Freddie Banks at UNLV, and they were saying, hey, they're going to hit this three-point shot like a layup. It's going to be so easy. Well, I mean, it wasn't quite a layup. The best shooters in the country that year shot a little over 40%, not that far off of what it is today, and the college game, because of the three-point shot, actually got a little bit better. No lead was safe. The three-point shot spread the floor. It unclogged the lane. It allowed for player movement. It allowed more for ball movement. Yeah, the end of college hoops that was being reported when this rule was instituted, it was a little bit exaggerated. That's not exactly how that went. The college game has benefited greatly from the three-point shot. Hey, if you'd like to contact us, maybe tell us your favorite college three-point shooter of all time. I don't know. Maybe it's someone like Jerry McNamara at Syracuse. Maybe Steph Curry at a little college called Davidson, J.J. Redick at Duke, or Dennis Scott at Georgia Tech. We would, of course, love to hear from you. Hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or you can go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. Both of those handles are at dailydosesports, and maybe it's not college basketball or three-point related. Maybe you've got a different question. Maybe you've got a comment. Maybe you have a suggestion for us here at The Dose. Feel free to reach out. We would love to hear from you. Also, be sure you stop by tpublic.com, search Daily Dose, scroll down until you see our logo, and there you can pick up some new Daily Dose gear that we have over there. We do now have our Daily Dose iTeam gear over there, so you can look just like our team in the field, tracking down inside information each and every day, but it's not just t-shirts. We've got hoodies, we've got coffee mugs, we've got laptop cases, stickers, a number of very cool things over at tpublic.com. And you know, the cool thing about ordering t-shirts or sweatshirts or hoodies, you can order them in whatever color that you actually prefer. Lots of things at tpublic.com for the Daily Dose listener in your life. Make sure that you stop by there. Hey, today on the show, we do have a few breaking news stories that we want to make sure that we cover. But then we are actually going to be talking some college basketball this week. Hey, the NCAA Final Four is now set. It is going to be coming up on Saturday. But here's a question that I have for you. Are there any truly dominant teams in the Final Four? Going to be talking about some actual dominant teams a little bit later today on the show. But before we get to that, I do have some news stories we should probably cover. You know, I told you yesterday to be aware of April Fool's Day. Don't fall for any nonsense. Because you know there are always people out there throwing out some fake news and throwing out some garbage that isn't to be believed. I mean, we saw New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady threw out that he was retiring. Ha ha, Tom, you got everybody. Except no one really believed it. Well, it does seem that new Arizona Cardinals coach Cliff Kingsbury had better start listening to the Daily Dose, because yesterday on April Fool's Day, it sounds like he actually got pranked. Because Los Angeles Rams coach Sean McVay welcomed Cliff Kingsbury to the NFL by trying to trick him into thinking he was going to be losing some draft picks because of tampering with Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes. He said he pulled the prank at a dinner he attended with Kingsbury and Mahomes, with who, of course, Kingsbury coached in college at Texas Tech. Here's what Sean McVay had to say. We have a mutual friend that I put his name in my phone as Roger Goodell. I had this friend send me a text saying, I can't believe you're at dinner with Kingsbury and Mahomes. You know better than this. This is tampering. You're both losing picks. I showed Cliff the text and he saw a ghost. I said, you better call your general manager right away. We couldn't let it go on too long, but it was pretty good. We got him pretty good. McVay said he talked to Kingsbury later about the prank, and the Cardinals coach told him, that's messed up. I'm going to get you back. Now, this is all fun and games, and this is all funny or whatever. But here's the question that I have. If you are truly an Arizona Cardinals fan, I think those are a thing, right? They do exist, don't they? I think they do. How are you feeling about your new head coach right now? This is the guy that is going to be the new young brains of your franchise, and he's falling for pranks like this? I mean, what is he going to do when he runs up against, you know, a good opponent? When he runs up against a complicated scheme? He already fell for the banana in the tailpipe prank.
Look, man, I ain't falling for no banana in my tailpipe.
What's he gonna fall for next? I can't wait to see how many trick plays get pulled on Cliff Kingsbury this year, because you know he's gonna bite on all of them. Run the fake punt, run the fake extra point, run the fake field goal. Everything apparently is going to work on the Arizona Cardinals this year. Hey, good luck, Arizona. Hope it all works out. Speaking of the NFL, you know, we know the NFL draft is still nearly a month away, but sportsbook operator CG Technology actually released NFL win totals for all 32 teams on Sunday. It's always kind of interesting to see where Las Vegas has everyone as far as how many wins they think they're going to get. Now, the New England Patriots went 11-5 last year. They won the Super Bowl. And right now, Vegas has them. Before the draft even comes, they have them with the highest win total. They put the New England Patriots at 11 wins. That makes them the top pick for the fourth consecutive year and for the 10th time since 2004. Do you think that's too high for the Patriots? Can the Patriots win another 11 games? I don't know if I would bet that over if I was looking at that board. With some of the losses they have, and remember, they still don't have a defensive coordinator, it might make you a little bit hesitant. But we do also know that Vegas looks at the rest of the Patriots division and goes, well, yeah, but I mean, who are they going to lose to? Like, who's rising up to knock off the Patriots in that division? We know for a fact they get 6 wins right off the bat. All they got to do is piece together another 5. Then the Los Angeles Rams, the New Orleans Saints, and the Kansas City Chiefs have the next highest over-under. Vegas installed them at 10.5. And of course, the Arizona Cardinals, who we just talked about, they do own that number one pick in the 2019 NFL draft. They are dead last. They have the lowest win total by Vegas at 5. Here's some bad news, though. The Miami Dolphins are tied with the Cardinals, also at 5 wins. Would you touch either one of those teams? Not sure I would. A couple of other teams of note here. The Indianapolis Colts are coming in at 9.5. I don't know. I have a feeling the way that team has been assembled and some of the things they're doing in the offseason, the Indianapolis Colts might be a sneaky pick there. They may go over that 9.5 mark. Both the Cleveland Browns and the Pittsburgh Steelers have been set at 9 wins. So what they're telling us basically is they think you can win the division at 9 wins because the Browns and the Steelers are the highest of any AFC North team. The San Francisco 49ers come in at 8 wins. That might be a little bit high for that team. Got to see what happens with Jimmy Garoppolo coming back. The Jacksonville Jaguars are also at 8 wins. Can they do anything with Nick Foles at quarterback? You wonder about that. Now, personally, the Denver Broncos come in at 7 wins by Vegas. That actually probably sounds about right. I would think 7 wins is probably right in their wheelhouse. One other interesting one of note, though, the Oakland Raiders come in at 6 wins. That Oakland might be a little bit higher than that. You go get Antonio Brown. You go get Vontaze Burfict. You have 4 pretty high picks in the coming NFL draft. You would think that the Raiders would be a little bit higher than 6 wins. I mean, remember, owner Mark Davis says they've really got to be focused because they have big plans going on. They didn't want to be on Hard Knocks. Can't they get more than 6 wins? You would certainly think so. I would like to see what Vegas adjusts this to as we get a little bit closer to the season. Shifting over to college hoops, it seems that the University of Kentucky has offered head coach John Calipari a lifetime contract. Yeah, this comes after UCLA apparently offered him a 6-year, $48 million contract to come out to Los Angeles. The deal would be a combination of a head coaching extension and also a paid role as an ambassador following his retirement. Now, you might wonder what that means. What I think that means is they want John Calipari to continue to go to the NBA draft and drum more business for Kentucky. Calipari, whose current contract at Kentucky runs through 2024, is already the highest paid coach in the country with a total compensation of $9.2 million this year. Now, we know Kentucky lost to Auburn in the Elite Eight on Sunday, but Calipari is 60. He has coached Kentucky to Final Fours in 2011, 12, 14, and 15, and Kentucky did actually win the title in 2012. Hey, there's no question whatsoever, John Calipari can recruit. And UCLA, as feeble an attempt as this might have been, was basically saying, hey, look, we need to drum up some business. Let's at least throw a line out there. If Calipari wants out, maybe he would consider coming here. So they threw a line out, and Kentucky cut that line and said, yeah, there's no chance he's going there. Here is one thing that I don't know if UCLA realizes, though. Does UCLA realize, I don't care what team beats him. Like I said, Kentucky has gone to the Final Four five different times. They have won it just once. But whoever knocks Kentucky out of the tournament every single year, realize this. Kentucky always, always has more talent than whatever team beat them. Every single time, Kentucky has more talent. Who knocked them out? Doesn't matter. Who knocked Kentucky out this year? Auburn. Who has more talent? Kentucky. Who knocked them out last year? Who cares? I guarantee Kentucky had more talent than whoever that team was. Every single year, Calipari has more talent. And every single year, except for one, Kentucky always loses. Just kind of something to keep in mind. Finally, I know this story broke over the weekend, but I wanted to kind of wait on it until we got some more information because there is a disturbing story coming out in the NBA. But like I said, I kind of wanted to take some time and take a little bit closer of a look at this. But here is the story that is coming out. 8 months after a 29-year-old woman said NBA star Kristaps Porzingis raped her inside his apartment, she contacted the New York Knicks legal department to see if they could mediate in private a payment of $68,000. That is according to emails obtained by ESPN. At the time of the woman's documented communication with the Knicks legal staff, no criminal complaint had even been filed with New York police. The Knicks eventually referred the woman to Porzingis' personal legal representation, and ESPN has actually obtained a series of text messages between the woman and Porzingis, as well as the emails that she sent back and forth with the Knicks. And the texts and the emails kind of show a woman that wanted to pursue a romantic relationship with Porzingis in the aftermath of this alleged assault back in February of 2018. But she also wanted him to honor what she says was his commitment to give her $68,000 for a college fund for her brother. According to the emails, the woman who lived in the same apartment building as Porzingis told the Knicks that she went to Porzingis' apartment to get his autograph in the late night hours after Porzingis had blown his knee out on February 6, 2018. After what the woman told the Knicks was an extremely aggressive encounter, she said Porzingis agreed to co-sign a statement with her that promised the payment of nearly $70,000. Of course, Porzingis was traded to the Dallas Mavericks back in January, but he still hasn't played because he's still continuing to rehab that torn left ACL. But texts sent in the weeks following the alleged assault include the woman asking to spend intimate time with Porzingis. Some of the messages even included the woman sending explicit photos of herself. After asking the Knicks in October to help her get the money from Porzingis, she emailed the Knicks a series of text messages that included Porzingis' invitation to visit his apartment the night of the alleged assault. Porzingis told her he was drunk, according to the text. The woman agreed to come to his apartment, responding, "I'm not fancy at all. I'm in flip-flops and a nightdress. I'm basic." In another email, the woman wrote, "After the extremely aggressive encounter, he was very apologetic, loving, and caring, hence the offer he made to pay my little brother's tuition and more. Although how he treated me was horrendous, as a Knicks fan, I do not want him to get in any trouble with the law. I stayed back and enjoyed the rest of the time that I spent with him. It's crucial to note, the fun times I had with him doesn't negate the fact that he offered to compensate me as a soothing gift, even though I didn't ask him to." The woman also said she stayed with Porzingis until 11 a.m. the day after the assault. Look, I am always hesitant to say that someone is lying about something as serious as this until we have all the facts. But when you hear some of the facts coming out here, This is not the behavior of someone who is a victim of a violent crime. This feels very much like an extortion attempt. And it also sounds like the Knicks had already vetted the entire incident before they were allowed to make the trade with Dallas, because Dallas needed to know, is this going to be some sort of a legal problem we have to deal with eventually? I guess we'll see where this all goes, but nothing about this story sounds right. Nothing about this story sounds believable at all, and it is a very, very ugly look for the NBA and Kristaps Porzingis. We'll see where it all ends up. Hey, coming back, we were told this year by the sports media that the Duke Blue Devils just might be a dominant team this year. Yeah, they didn't even make it to the Final Four. But who are some of the actual dominant teams that we have seen in March Madness? We're going to talk about a few of those when we get back. Hey, just a quick reminder that if you have any shopping you need to do, whether it's for yourself, maybe you have birthdays coming up, maybe you have holidays coming up, just remember, you might want to head over to lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles that feature your favorite TV shows, your favorite movies, and your favorite video games. April's Loot Crate theme is now out. It is called Showdown. When the time for talking is over and there are scores to be settled, these pop culture heavy hitters are always ready for a showdown. Hey, join us as we celebrate iconic battles with epic gear. April's Loot Crate theme features items from Captain Marvel, Aquaman, and Godzilla, King of the Monsters. But remember, if none of those franchises interest you, you can always go over to Loot Crate. You can choose from a selection of crates. You can get a monthly subscription of crates that'll arrive in your mailbox every month. Or you can just go over there and order individual items. And remember, they have a ton of things in any franchise that you can think of. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, make sure you type Daily Dose in the coupon box. We are going to get you 10% off of your order, just as a little thank you for listening to the Daily Dose. Okay, so I know that we have heard just a little bit about Duke maybe being a dominant team. And we did also hear, are they one of the greatest classes ever? Now, I think that's a little bit silly, and we concede with the way that season ended, it's really, really hard to put them up there. But I also think it's really hard just to compare this current era now to any era we've seen before. Because we currently have this one and done era where players are leaving after just one season. And they're playing against other teams sometimes that are doing the exact same thing. In fact, kids today are actually looked down at if they stay a little bit longer. But can you imagine these teams today, kids that are 18, maybe 19 years old, playing against some of the actual dominant teams, the most dominant teams of all time? Yeah, I don't think teams today can even talk about being in that conversation. It's completely different than what it was. I mean, what about a team like the 89-90 Nevada Las Vegas team? Anderson Hunt and Greg Anthony, that was a very solid athletic backcourt. Stacey Augmon could do a little bit of everything. Larry Johnson played much bigger than his size, and UNLV was running teams off the floor. They scored 94 points per game, and they weren't going out and chucking up threes. That really wasn't their game. But they beat their ridiculous Loyola Marymount team in the tournament, and they blew them out. Then they beat a loaded Georgia Tech team that had Kenny Anderson, that had Brian Oliver, that had Dennis Scott, and then they blew out a Duke team in the championship game, a Duke team that was loaded but hadn't quite hit their prime just yet. I don't know how any teams from the last 10 or 15 years could compare with that UNLV team. Think back to a team that might have even been better. What about the 92 Duke Blue Devils? They had Bobby Hurley. They had Christian Laettner and Grant Hill. Right now, we are starting to hear some people talk about, hey, is Zion Williamson maybe the greatest player in Duke history? No. No, he's not. He certainly isn't nearly as accomplished as Laettner. And I think people forget just how good Grant Hill actually was. Before the injuries, Grant Hill was as athletic and as explosive as we had ever seen. Mike Krzyzewski led Duke in 92 to back-to-back championships. No team had won back-to-back titles since the early 70s. And they got that first one by beating that UNLV team in a rematch that made no sense because we knew UNLV was even better in 91. Then in 92, they won it again. They pounded Michigan's Fab Five. That Michigan team had a loaded freshman class. I don't know that this Duke team could hold up with them, let alone the 92 Duke team that blew them out. Going back a little bit further, the 1982 North Carolina Tar Heels were loaded, not just with college talent, I mean, guys that were great at the college level, but I'm talking about Hall of Fame type of players. Because remember, Dean Smith had Jimmy Black, good college player. He had Sam Perkins, really good NBA player. He had James Worthy, phenomenal NBA player. And he had a freshman by the name of Michael Jordan. Yeah, North Carolina had to beat Clyde Drexler and the Houston Cougars in the Final Four before they went on to win the title. Good luck with any team in this era matching up with that group. Just a few seasons later, we had another college team that didn't just dominate. They changed the culture in this country. Because the 1984 Georgetown Hoyas weren't just a basketball team. They were an attitude. John Thompson's group didn't smile. They didn't do interviews. Oh, but they did dominate. Fred Brown, Michael Jackson, Michael Graham, Reggie Williams, David Wingate, and of course Patrick Ewing. They went 34-3 in 84. They knocked off a very good Hakeem Olajuwon-led Houston team and won the title. And everyone in the country, people in Los Angeles, people in New York, everyone across the nation wanted to wear the gear of a small private Catholic school in Washington, D.C. That is what Georgetown did, because they didn't go out there and act nice. They went out there and they were mean and they tried to kick your butt up and down the floor. That Georgetown team, oh, they were definitely a dominant team. In 1996, we had a pretty dominant team from the Bluegrass State because Wayne Turner, Ron Mercer, Derek Anderson, Walter McCarty, Antoine Walker, and Tony Delk led the Kentucky Wildcats to a 34-2 record. And then in the Final Four, they beat Marcus Camby and, yes, John Calipari's Massachusetts team in the Final Four. Then they beat the John Wallace-led Syracuse Orange in the title game. The 96 Kentucky Wildcats were known as the Untouchables. Yeah, they were untouchable. That Kentucky team was really, really good. Now, if we go clear back to 1966, we have a team that didn't go undefeated, but they were really, really close. Because the 66 Texas Western, they have now become Texas El Paso team, they made history. For the first time, a team with five black starters won the national championship. A feat Don Haskins Miners achieved by beating an all-white Kentucky team, and they beat them by 7. Bobby Joe Hill and Willie Worsley led Texas Western to a 28-1 record and a victory over eventual Lakers Showtime head coach Pat Riley and Kentucky. But make no mistake, that Texas Western team was dominant. Now, this next team might not be the first team that would come to your mind, because it's been a program that has really struggled. It was a program that actually got in a lot of trouble. But in 1956, the San Francisco Dons went 29-0. And what's crazy about that is they averaged beating every team on their schedule by 20 points. And while they were loaded with talented players, guys like Bill Russell and Cal Perry and do everything guard Casey Jones, Jones was actually ruled ineligible for the NCAA tournament because he had been granted a fifth year of eligibility because of an injury. So he had to sit out the tournament. But in the tournament, San Francisco still won their four games by double digits, even without Casey Jones, who was a great, great player. But the 56 Dons, yeah, they were really good. Yes, we have seen some teams that get close to being dominant in recent years. I mean, the Villanova Wildcats last year, yeah, they were really good. The 2006-2007 Florida Gators, they won back-to-back titles. But if you want dominance, we need to go a little bit further back. Look at the 1976 Indiana Hoosiers team. In 1975, they had gone 31-1, but lost to Kentucky in the Elite Eight. But in 76, they never lost a game. Bobby Knight's squad opened the season number one, and they proved they were worthy of that ranking because they blew out defending champion UCLA by 20 in the very first game of the season. Then in the tournament, after they knocked out St. John's in Alabama, they beat Bo Ellis and Butch Lee, who played for Marquette. Then they beat UCLA again in the Final Four before finally blowing out Ricky Green and Phil Hubbard and the Michigan Wolverines in what was an all Big Ten championship game. Kent Benson, Scott May, Quinn Buckner, and Bob Wilkerson were all selected at number 11 or higher in the NBA draft. And these weren't 18-year-old kids. These were 22 and 23-year-old men. You really think the babies of today in this generation could hang with that? Yeah, me neither. I don't think they would have a chance. But if you want the ultimate dominance in college basketball, let's be honest, you start in one place. And that is in Los Angeles with those basketball teams with the Wizard of Westwood. Because John Wooden's UCLA teams were dominant at a completely different level. At a completely ridiculous level. No, there wasn't as much depth nationwide then. You didn't have 68 teams in the tournament. And you certainly didn't have 10, 12, 15 teams that could win it all. The tournament just wasn't as big as it is now. And yes, the whole Sam Gilbert most likely paying players boatloads of cash taints the UCLA legacy at least a little bit. Because we kind of have this mental idea that UCLA under John Wooden was this pristine temple of ethical goodness. But geez, UCLA beat everyone. I could literally pick any team out of like 9 or 10 different years and they would still be one of the most dominant teams ever. But if I were to pick the most dominant college basketball team of all time, I would probably have to go with the 1972 team that went 30-0, and on average, they beat every team they faced by an average score. This is the average score. 95-64. Yes, they averaged beating every team on their schedule by 31 points. That, folks, that is dominance. This wasn't even the Lou Alcindor era. He had already changed his name to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he was already in the NBA. No, this was Bill Walton and Henry Bibby and Jamal Wilkes and Larry Farmer, Sven Nader, Greg Lee, Larry Holifield. This was a team that absolutely couldn't be touched. Now remember, this was a pre-shot clock era. Yet only one team chose to just take the air out of the ball. We're just going to stall and see, can we stall the Bruins out of the game? Notre Dame actually hosted UCLA in January, and their head coach Digger Phelps said, hey, here's what we're going to do. We're just going to hold the ball and maybe we can stay in the game with UCLA. Notre Dame attempted one shot in the first 10 minutes of the second half. That still didn't matter. It just delayed the inevitable. UCLA cruised to a 57-32 win. I know as sports fans, we have extremely short memories. But when we start throwing out superlatives like best team ever, best player ever, best recruit ever, sometimes it gets a little bit silly. And honestly, what it really does is it preys on younger fans who just don't have the sense of history because they just weren't around. They didn't see those things. They don't know. But I know my Daily Dose listeners, they're a little bit smarter than that. When they start throwing out things like, hey, could this Duke team be the best class ever? Could this Duke team have the best player in Duke history on it ever? Could this be one of the most dominant teams ever? No. No, it couldn't, because we actually know there have been some really, truly dominant teams in the past. Hey, tomorrow on The Daily Dose, we will, of course, have the latest breaking sports news, but we will also have our Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings, and I'm telling you right now, it is going to be a little bit revealing when we look at our Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings tomorrow. We are taking a look at the state of basketball today, and I was a little bit surprised with what I found. Hey, I have to say thank you all so much for listening to The Daily Dose. For all of you that share the show, that tell your friends, that tell your coworkers, hey, you got to check out this podcast. Thank you so, so much. It is the only way we get new listeners. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all tomorrow. Have a great Tuesday.
Look, man, I ain't falling for no banana in my tailpipe.